I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks.
Herzlich willkommen zum Larger Living Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Larger Living Podcast. I hope you're not confused by the German intro. Let me explain. Hi, hello. My name is Dot, which is short for Dorothee or Dorothee or Dorothy. And I'm a certified intuitive eating counselor living in Berlin, Germany. I'm half French, half German, and I speak English fluently. So here you are. I interview experts, but also lay people, basically people from all walks of life on anti-diet life, which includes health at every size, intuitive eating, body respect, fat rights and fat activism, body liberation and the like. Also feminism, and because I'm a cultural anthropologist, I might sprinkle some social science into there from time to time. So this is what the podcast is all about. And if you're a first-time listener, you will find that the expert interviews are in the expert's language, but I do translate them into German. I do that as a service for my German-only speaking followers. Before you enjoy this beautiful interview, I have a small announcement to make. And that is that a lot of things changed after my long break that I had to take. And the reason why I had to take the break is that I was fed up with podcasting. I had enough of it. I didn't want to do it anymore. You know, I think it's something that we can all relate to in this pandemic. Sometimes we're just exhausted with life. We just had enough. And we just cannot do it anymore. We just can't adult. And we cannot adult for a week or even a month or even 6 months. Yeah, so now I'm back. I can adult again. I can do this podcast again. I'm actually like really excited for all the lovely interviews that I've got coming, because you have no idea. I have so many amazing guests for you. You will not regret coming back. Yeah, so the problem is that when you take a long-ass break like that, in podcasting, you do have backlog in general. And I used to have a backlog of only up to 3 months, which was manageable. Stressful, but manageable. And I had to tell my podcast guests, hey, you know, like 3 months, and then it goes live. And everyone was just like, yeah, fine. Oh, that's great. Actually, I can plan ahead and do stuff. So yeah, taking an unforeseen break because you just can't anymore, and then coming back pushes that 3 month backlog onto a 9 month backlog, like having a child, having a baby, basically, which is coincidentally funny. So within these 9 months, a lot of things changed for Chrissy, my podcast guest of today. She, as she says in the podcast, she started uni. Again, she started studying again. She studies to become a counselor, and she's doing amazing. But, and I have to add that, she's not taking on clients at the moment. She had to let all of her clients go, including me, which is sad. But don't worry about me. I'm seeking other professional care. Not as awesome as Chrissy, I have to admit. But I'm in good hands and taking care of my mental health. Yeah, you cannot, as much as it pains me to say that, you cannot go to Chrissy right now and book a coaching appointment with her, but you can go to her website. The website is still on and there are still resources on there. So it's www.youareenoughcoaching, all in one word, .cu.uk. And there you find a lot about Chrissy, you find a lot of resources, you find past blog articles that she wrote, you find past stuff, and it's good, it's juicy stuff, just as good and just as juicy as this interview is. So I just wanted you to know that. So Please enjoy this interview. Chrissy is phenomenal. And if you ever wondered who coaches the coach, now you have the answer. Hello and welcome, dear Chrissy, to the Larger Living Podcast. I'm so happy you could make it. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel so honored. I told you this. I feel honored that you invited me to alongside all these incredible people. And yeah, thank you so much.
So I have to do another kind of full disclosure deal here, the one similar to the ones that I did before interviewing Elise Resch. I know Chrissy a little bit better because Chrissy is my coach. So when you have been wondering, like, who coaches the coach? That girl over there. She does. Found her, yeah, by surprise, wrote down in the in our, because we went to the same coaching school. We're both animates. We learned with Animas Coaching School in the UK. This is why Chrissy has this delightful English accent. you're phenomenal. And as soon as I talked to you, I knew that we clicked because we both advocate for body positivity so much, but not the fake ass marketing body positivity to flat tummy tea bullshit. The real everybody is a good body positivity, fat activism. We are intersectional feminists, both of us. You are an actress, which also is a little bit uniting us, because I wanted to become a theater actress. That was my first big, like, job dream. And I even auditioned, and I figured out that I have a debilitating fear of auditions, and then I quit and started studying. So yeah, we have a few things in common. So Without being too biased, you're a phenomenal coach, Chrissy. You really are. And this interview, of course, is not related to the coaching. This is just because you are a body image advocate just as much as I am. And I want to welcome you on the podcast to tell your story, of course. So this is not a coaching session. But yeah, I needed to do a little full disclosure up front so people know how I know you. Of course, I just know you from one perspective, from the client perspective. And so please introduce yourself.
Well, first of all, thank you for such a loving welcome. I mean, obviously, I hope you know I echo those feelings, very much reciprocated. I love working with you. You're awesome. And the work you do is amazing. So I am a coach, as you said, from Animas. I'm also an eating disorder recovery coach. So I work for the Recover Clinic. And I am also an actor. And actually this September, I'm going to university to get my BSc in counseling and eventually get a master's in psychotherapy. So therapist is my future plan, right? My company, my coaching brand is called You Are Enough Coaching. And that kind of encapsulates really my passion and the work that I do. Because, you know, for me, I mean, in terms of like my personal story, like, you know, my background was, you know, traumatic upbringing and lots of mental illness as a result of that. And a lot of self-hatred from a very young age. And I think when I was privileged and lucky enough to get treatment when I was 20 for an eating disorder alongside depression and other things. And that really was the turning point of my life, because I finally had a safe space where I could work through the stuff that was weighing me down for so long. But it was at that turning point that I was psychoeducated, and I learned, okay, the way that I see myself is not the reality. It's a distortion. It's a distortion that's been caused by all of these really painful events. Therefore, if I'm able to change my perspective, my view of myself from such a punitive, angry, hateful perspective to a compassionate one, the same compassion that I'm able to give my friends, for example, life is going to be very different. And lo and behold, that's true. That's what happened. And being able to recognize myself and see myself in a compassionate and loving way, which is a process, it doesn't happen overnight, really opened my eyes to the world around me and to how many people struggle with some kind of feeling of not enough. And obviously there's a massive spectrum. It's not full on self-hatred or nothing. But, you know, I just saw so much pain in the world and so in our society, so many people going about thinking, I'm not good enough in this way, I'm not good enough in that way. Oh, I'm not lovable, I'm not this. And seeing the different layers, because for me, I was able to recognize, right, these painful events left me with a core shame. Shame means I am wrong. There is something inherently about me that other people are not going to love. And then, of course, that translates into, you know, other people, no one's going to love me. And being able to see kind of remnants of that in people, it was kind of coming out in different ways. And in terms of, we're talking about body image, obviously I had an eating disorder, which for those who don't know, like an eating disorder is a coping mechanism. It's an illness that develops as a result of trauma or something distressing. It's not just the standalone issue. And a lot of people think that eating disorders, well, a lot of people, some people think that it's just about food and body. Those are the presenting symptoms. And in a way that, from my understanding, the brain kind of tricks you into focusing on hating your body when actually the pain goes a lot deeper. So I hate my body is actually code word for I hate me, or I'm in a huge amount of pain, right? And in terms of body image, I mean, you know, we all have our individual trauma, right? On top of that, we are born into society that trains us to hate ourselves through many different ways. Diet culture is one of them. So you're born in a society that tells you, unless you look like this one ideal, which only exists because of white supremacy, if you don't look like this, there is something wrong with you. And then that is scary, because to have that told over and over, that plays on the wound of, is anyone going to love me? And so for me, when I hear someone criticize their body or say, oh, I really need to lose weight, or I really need to change in some way, or I'm ugly or whatever, what I'm really hearing, and this may be a presumption, a projection, what I'm really hearing is, I'm scared I'm not going to be loved, or I'm scared that I'm wrong, I'm bad. And yeah, and I that's the thing that one way that I noticed that kind of inner pain in people. So my passion, obviously I'm not a therapist, so I can't work on trauma, I can't go into the past yet. But my passion is helping people recognize their current perception of themselves, which therefore affects their perception of others and the world in its entirety. Recognize that these, you know, hateful and these negative beliefs about themselves are distortions. They're not the reality. And then work towards to go from not good enough to enough, which again, it doesn't happen like that. It can be a long, arduous journey, oftentimes is, mine was. And it's also important to say it's never ending. You know, you can never love yourself enough, right? Or at least work towards it. And sorry, I'm like, I ramble on a lot, but I remember when I was in treatment, we were having a group around what self-love is, right? First time I ever heard that word. And I was like, oh, I don't know what that is, but I want it. And I remember someone saying, oh, it just seems so, you know, unlikely, it's impossible, it's this, that, and the other. First of all, because there's this idea that self-love is literally always being obsessively in love with yourself. That's not what it is. Exactly. It could literally be acknowledging, I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm somewhere in the middle and I'm all right, right? It could be anything you want. I'm okay. But then I remember saying, well, if you've hated yourself for so long, why is the opposite so, like, surely there's an opposite alternative, or at least an alternative of some kind to I'm shit, basically. Excuse my language.
Hey, I can
I can. No, you are allowed to curse in this podcast. Like, I say shit and fuck all the time. This is an explicit podcast because, you know, swearing is the spice of life. And I've been restricting food and spice and joy and pleasure for so long in my life that I kind of feel that fuck it, no more.
Fucking get all of it in.
Yeah, exactly. and it's just it. I think that it's a real like I like if I say there's a difference between saying oh, this is fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Or fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference.
Yeah.
And if I use it as an emphasis for something, it adds gravitas to a sentence. Right? So if I use it as that, I'm back. So if I use it to underline something as you know, in semantics, then I think that if I don't do any person any harm by swearing, like, why the fuck not? And it's a difference because if you say this is unjust, or if you say this is fucking unjust, there's a difference. So yeah, let's lose it. Use it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many beautiful, beautiful swear words. We might as well enjoy the language.
It's the spice of life. Like I say.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Yeah.
And I love what you said about you've been restricting, you know, so much joy, you know, for so long. And that's the thing. I think, you know, being able to enjoy, you know, all the pleasurable things as much as you can, right? Because,
yeah,
you know, again, sadly, and we've spoke about this before, you know, it is a privilege a lot of the time to have access to these basic things that we need, right? And, you know, that's why, you know, when we're able to have pleasure, you know, as long as, you know, we're not hurting ourselves or using them, those things in negative ways, then of course, like, enjoy as much as you can. You get one life. I mean, in my opinion, you get one life in this body, might as well, you know, get all the juice out of it.
I love it. I love it. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And yeah, let's talk about one thing that I haven't talked with you yet as a client coach relationship kind of deal, because what made you pursue your eating disorder specialist career apart from having an eating disorder yourself? Because that can't be the only motivation.
Well, I think it wasn't just the experience of the illness itself, which is horrible, but, you know, whether diet culture, whether or not it has pushed someone or contributed to someone developing an eating disorder, it contributes to many people having disordered eating.
Yes.
It's a bully. It is a bully. It is telling you night and day, 24/7, you're ugly, you're ugly, you're ugly, you're ugly. Like, that's what it does. And for me, it was also this, from the body image, purely that side of eating disorder, disordered eating, or even just a slightly problematic relationship with food and relationship with one's image, one's body image. Ultimately, it's this deep belief, this deep driving force in me that says, well, I never deserved to hate my body ever. And no one deserves to hate their body ever. And in fact, not just that, but no one deserves ever to be told that they are wrong. That their body, well, they are wrong. I mean, behavior, that's another thing. But for someone else to tell a person, you know, your body is unacceptable, or there's, you know, and the fact that so many do it to themselves, you know, it wasn't just others that did it to me. Then I was doing it to myself because I internalized that. Basically, it's not fair. It's just not fair. And people, and this, you know, relates to what I was saying before, you know, inherently a human being, does not deserve to go around inherently feeling that they are worthless, that they are unlovable.
I agree, yeah.
And that can be, you know, that can manifest in many ways in a person thinking that they are ugly. No one deserves to feel ugly. And yeah, it was just that general recognizing it in others as well as myself and thinking, right, well, that's got to change. That was one thing. Noticing how insidious diet culture is in so many places you wouldn't think you would find it. And if I may share that example I gave you just before we started talking, this to me is like the icing on top of the cake, to be honest. So when I was growing up, I was body shamed a lot because I was big, because I was eating to deal with trauma. The amount of doctors that said to me continuously, you're going to get diabetes, you're going to get heart disease, you're going to get this, that, and the other, right? Years later, when I was 20, when I had my eating disorder and I was tiny, I was malnourished. I lost my period because my body was falling apart. I was shutting down, right, from the inside. I was deeply, obviously, unhappy. I did not have a single doctor say to me that you're unhealthy and that your body's shutting down. No one even noticed, because apparently health has a look. And seeing that happen, and also when I was a kid, the amount of doctors that were saying, you're going to get this illness, that illness, not a single one said to me, you're going to get bulimia because of all the weight stigma you have now. And also, you're going to get this mental illness because of all the trauma you're experiencing. No one said that to me. Seeing that happen literally to me and happen right before my eyes really made me think, you know, this perception of health that we have is crap. It's utter crap. You can't tell someone's health from how they look, number one. Number two, health, mentally, physically, whatever, is a privilege anyway. You know, to be able to have access to the food that your particular body needs, right? And I gave this example. I recently got diagnosed with anemia. If I didn't have access to doctors to be able to get my iron prescription and to the food I needed to up my iron levels, that would be detrimental, right? It is a privilege to be healthy. So this weird, you know, deeply embedded judgment of people, I mean, for whatever reason, I'm like, this is just wrong. This shouldn't be happening. And part of that is acknowledging our individual privilege and thinking, you know what, the fact that I even have roof over my head, food, the food that I need, is a huge privilege. So what right have I to be judging anyone, right? So many, many things, many experiences, but that really, you know, and the fact when I was really unwell, I was the unhealthiest I'd ever been in my life. No one saw it. You know, so that to me really opened my eyes to just how flawed in that particular department, when it comes to food and body and health, how deeply flawed our society is. Yeah.
I fully agree. I just have one thing to add, and that is a quote by Lynn Dobakin. Back then it was Lynn Darbakin from Health at Every Size. We cannot continue to prescribe eating disorders on perfectly healthy fat people in order to shrink them into the desirable size that society wants them to be at. We cannot continue to prescribe an eating disorder to a fat person because we want them to look a different way. Mm-hmm. And that to me was like, when I read that, I was just, yeah, I had like tears in my eyes. I could feel the pent up anger from all these years of fat shaming, body shaming, internalized fat phobia, of course, too, boiling up. And I was just like, yeah, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. And people need, like, doctors are not saints. Like they're not fucking gods. In Germany, we have a saying, we call doctors demigods in white. You as a Greek person, I didn't mention that you were Greek. Demigods in white might be very funny to you to hear that, right?
Yeah. But you saying that just got me thinking about something else we were saying, that mm-hmm. and the importance of self-awareness.
Yeah.
The importance of the difference between a person who is open to being wrong, to being corrected, who is open to the fact that the pursuit of knowledge really is the pursuit of ignorance, right? The difference between that person, the person who's like, no, it's this, full stop, point blank, cannot be changed. Now, there are certain things that are, you know, facts, obviously. You need to be, you know, and being able to, being open to doubt and being open to being stupid, you know, and by stupid, I mean, just, you know, being an idiot and making mistakes and, you know, like it's some, you know, it's, I think it's so important keeping that humility and knowing actually, no, as whatever job, whatever, anything, there is always much, much more to learn. And that's a good thing, because then actual growth can happen and we can get results instead of just going, well, no, it can't be changed.
Exactly. I didn't think that I'm gonna quote Confucius in this podcast interview, but what the hell? My Chinese studies even empower me to quote him in the Chinese original, which goes like this: "Kong zi yue, xue bu zi yun," which means Confucius says, like "Kong zi yue," learning knows no bounds. Learning knows no bounds. You're never done. You're never done. And ever. There's another saying, it's the person who has stopped learning has stopped to be good at anything. And that's it. Like we keep on learning every single day, and that is totally fine. And we can, as long as we accept to be the beautiful, wonderful, curious, deeply flawed messes that we are, but also beautiful and amazing and unique and definitely, definitely worthy of love, we're good.
Absolutely. And coming off of that as well, and also being okay with the fact that, you know, for every one person that recognizes something good in us, one person's going to recognize something bad in us. True. For every one person who loves us, one person is going to hate us. Like, we are all Marmite. That's what it comes down to. Like, we are all Marmite, right?
That's a very British thing to say.
I couldn't think of like an equivalent. What's a more...
Excuse me, you just really hit me with that one, because I hate Marmite and Vegemite. I've been to Australia for 6 weeks when I was a teen, and they have Vegemite, which is similar to Marmite, but not quite the same. Apparently they taste different. And I've been to the boarding house for 1 week, and I was so appalled by the taste that I kind of had to steal one of those little airplane pots, you know, and bring them home just to show that to my peeps. Just look at this atrocity. It really exists. And then on the flight back, the little, you know, condiment pot of Vegemite broke, and my whole suitcase smelled.
That was like trauma.
I think so mama. Too. I think so too.
The mama. Whoever's in charge of Marmite was like, right, you disapprove? That's gonna happen.
I think so too. But now my parents knew, and they also didn't like it, and they didn't get to try it, but yeah.
That's like being okay with the fact that, you know, this is why, again, other people's opinions, you know, other people's perception of you, you know, that comes from them. Like, you know, go to the people that are able to love you unconditionally, see you as gorgeous, recognize your talents, you know, go to the people that are compatible with you. Don't waste your time with those who are not. But even, you know, with the mix of things, because you're always going to get criticism, you're always going to get compliments.
Yeah.
That is why that that strong foundation of knowing who you are is really important, because surviving on one is just as healthy as unhealthy as surviving on the other. So that's the thing. It's being able to stand alone in your you-ness, in your particular beauty, in your particular talents, in your intelligence, whatever it is, within all the chaos, you know, and being like, right, well, I'm still me, and my worth, my beauty, my strength, whatever, is not affected by what my society tells me, what other people tell me. But that's hard, you know, that's hard when you've got all these external voices. I mean, look at the media, you've got it shoved down your throat, you know, do this, change yourself in this way, change yourself in that way. Just leave me alone. Go away. Like,
oh, yeah. Now I know what I wanted to say. Yes. Now I know what I wanted to say earlier, because we've been talking about diet culture. And we're talking about, you know, the diet message, just like this whole, like, you are wrong and there's something wrong with you. And I think that the really toxic and the real dangerous thing about diet cultures and diets, or like the whole diet and beauty industry for that matter, as an esthetician, I can tell you this, is this whole thing. Oh yeah, there is something wrong with you and we have the product to fix it. Yeah. Buy our, and you can easily fix it with these five steps or with this wonderful miracle product against your wrinkles, for instance, or against your acne, or, you know, if you're talking about the beauty industry for change, it's the same bullcrap, different name, same bullcrap, different package. And that's that. I know that you're a fellow coach as well. So you're a fellow professional, and I'm going to go to that meta state of podcasting for just a change. And I've been talking about this earlier with another colleague. We have not been talking about it today. So it's a new topic. It's very difficult for us anti-mainstream, anti-diet, anti-weight loss, anti all of that mainstream bullshit people to advertise for our services. Because it's so easy for diet culture to say, oh, you have a problem? We can fix it with five easy steps forever. For us, it's very different and difficult too, because how do you market freedom? How do you market peace? How do you sell peace? Mm-hmm. And that is the thing. Like, it's very easy to bank on that war rhetoric, like you're at war with yourself. And this is why, like, all these diet programs have like military names in them, like boot camp and stuff like that, because it is perceived like a war against your own body, like a war against this problem that you need to fix. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, like us who have been through hell and back with this, who have said the only way out, the only way that we are never going to fall off that wagon is to not get on that wagon to begin with. Yeah. Like, I think that you know this struggle of how do you communicate that to people?
As you were talking, something came to my mind, and I don't know if this is going to make... I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
Going back to... I'm just thinking about when I was little, right? What I always wanted to hear, what I just wanted to hear is, you're great. You don't need to try. You know, you don't need to prove anything. You just are, and I love you. That's it. That's what me now needs to hear when I'm in a bad place. And I may be naive in assuming this, but I feel that that's what most need to hear.
Yeah.
When they are babies and throughout life, that unconditional acceptance.
Exactly.
That you don't need to prove your worth. You don't need to fight to be loved. You just are. Why? Because you're good enough. You deserve love just for being alive, mate. No other reason, right? That, in terms of, I wouldn't say if it's like, oh, a marketing technique, I wouldn't say it that, but the way that I present my message, what I do, the reason I do it, is by speaking to people like that and just saying, you are good enough, full stop. Whether or not you see it, that's a different issue. You deserve to see it, but I'm not going to tell you, you need to, you know, you need to fix who you are. You need to, you know, you need to fight to be something other than you're not. It's more about recognizing who you are is inherently okay, is good, and then expanding on the parts of you that you want to expand on, it growing the parts of you that you feel need growth. Perhaps you've, I mean, this is more, I guess, therapeutic, but let's say you notice a dysfunctional behavior pattern, right? Okay, let's work on that. But that's not saying you need, you know, there is something unlovable about you. That's saying that particular behavior is harmful or whatever. Let's work on that. I'm not selling people something to change themselves with, because I don't think there's anything that needs changing. I think that it's the aside from the view of oneself, and that's speaking to that little kid that's within all of us, that just wants unconditional love. And sadly, so many haven't received that, or haven't, and that's not, you know, me saying, you know, so many people haven't been loved, but so many people haven't been shown love. It's, again, it's different.
Oh, that is a good distinction. Yeah. I like that distinction. Yeah. Yeah, that's where it's at. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I do the same. What I also do is, especially because, you know, my niche is intuitive eating, certified intuitive eating counselor. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is, mm-hmm. you can eat intuitively all you want. You can be like the most health at every size expert, if there even is such a thing, person. You can be the most attuned with yourself, with your eating habits, with your body, with your movement, with your body image, with everything. But you still live in a toxic diet culture world. Yes. So I think I do two things personally. On the one hand, I have this whole thing of how do you get from I hate myself to I'm okay to actually I like some parts about me that are quite nice. So this is like my thing. I don't sell like body love to people. You don't need to love your body in order to no. This is not what I do. This is not my goal. And same as Dana Sturtevant and Hilary Canavy from Be Nourished, they have this this beautiful philosophy. They always say we have a C- policy. So when people work with us, we want them to get a C-. They don't need to be A student and, you know, ace all the courses and do like that. Just like C- is exactly what we thrive towards. So that's the same with, you know, the level of body acceptance, like accept your body, but also like care for it. Like acceptance is just the stepping stone, but I want them to, at the end, ideally, continue, like respect their body and take care of it. That's where I'm at. But then what I have to do as well is just this. Okay. I tell you to do, or I show you how you can do this with some techniques, and I work on that with you. And on the other hand, I also offer coachings and kind of trainings within my coachings to help my clients build resiliency against a fatphobic world. So that is also what I do. It's just like this. There are certain, this is more like psychoeducation, I know, but this is like more, okay, here are some proven tactics that help you in conflict situations, from the gray rock strategy, which is like total ignorance, to like boundary setting and stuff like that. So I guess this is my approach to this. But yeah, it's
that's incredible. And I
That's that.
Coming, and that's the thing, you're absolutely right. It's not, you know, like we live in some kind of utopia where, you know, we live in a society where self-hatred is encouraged, is promoted.
Yeah.
That is partly why it's such hard work. I mean, it's like, to think of another example, you know, if you're a kid in school and you're being bullied constantly, you're trying to keep yourself safe and you're being bullied, like, you know, one option is to leave that school, but, you know, we can't leave this planet. Like, you know, it's maybe one day, but, you know, it's hard work. And I think, you know, for myself, and I hope for anyone who's in this, you know, in the industry of helping people and working on any facet of this stuff, continually doing the work for yourself, you know, continually, you know, not hashtag self-care, but literally self-care from the basics, going to the doctor when you're sick, you know, doing your appointments, sleeping, eating, what have you, to the more, maybe the spiritual stuff, the more aesthetic stuff, the face mask or whatever. It is so important. And reading books, you know, continually reading books and educating. I mean, I love reading and educating myself on, I mean, not just this stuff, but anything that I'm interested in. But, you know, sometimes, oh, okay, this was quite painful. Okay, I need to look after myself. Or, oh, that. So it's hard work. And that's why I push self-compassion. What I mean, you know, some people say self-love, whatever, self-compassion, it is of vital importance because we are being bullied all the time, whether or not we're conscious of it. You know, when you pick up a magazine, I don't read magazines, but if you pick up a magazine and you see, you know, those horrible pictures of women's body parts being circled in red, what you are witnessing is public bullying. It's abusive. That is, you know, to witness bullying full stop in any capacity, it is traumatic as well for the people watching it because it shows you this environment is unsafe, you know, and I don't know. I think of it as the same thing. That fear of, oh my God, I'm not safe because these horrible things are happening, you know? Yeah. So you're absolutely right. I think building resilience and, you know, continually working on your relationship with your body, and especially for those who are facilitating that, you know, it's so important. Like, you can't help other people if you're not helping yourself, you know?
True.
So.
True. True. And this is why I get coached by you. This is why I pay you money.
It's like, look up yourself.
I need to wire you the money now, I guess. I get it. Okay, I will edit that out. But yeah, this is why you're my coach. I do have one single question left, if you have the time. I'm not sure.
No, okay, great. Please.
Okay. So this is like the interesting question I try to ask all of my podcast guests. I know it's a juicy one. What is a question or a topic that you get rarely asked, but that you are passionate about answering?
That is a good question. Two things came to my mind, actually. Mm-hmm. But I feel that one is probably more relevant to what we've spoken about. And that is realizing that I don't want kids.
Hallelujah. Finally, someone in the podcast talks about this, because I can give you a motherfucking high five on this, and I can like really... really give, yeah, I don't want kids either. And I knew since I was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I knew.
And the reason why I have recently become passionate about this is because the response that I haven't gotten that much, but the response of, oh, a woman who does not want children, that must mean you hate children. And I'm thinking, I love kids. Like, they're adorable. I love it. Some of my friends have had children. I love spending time with them. I'm their cool aunt, which is a huge honor. Like, I love being around kids. They make me giggle. That doesn't mean that there's something inherently wrong with me because I'm a woman, therefore, I'm a, like, and then we're playing into this gender stereotypes and this, that, and the other. But I just think, you know, again, why this assumption and lumping everyone together based on something, you know, something they all share? I mean, I think, you know, being childless by choice, I didn't realize there was a term for it, but there's a conversation I had recently. I think, you know, it's, you can not want children and still, you know, that's normal. In the same way that it's normal to not want to get married, in the same way that it's normal to, you know, everyone really is different. And I think we're opening up our eyes collectively a bit more to the, just how different an individual everyone is and how preference is a personal thing. It's not a, it, you know, so this societal thing of you do it this way, this way, this way, this way. I mean, I'm 26. By the time I'm 27, I will be going to university. You know, that's almost the reverse of most people I know in their 20s. That's fine. You know, there is no normal way to live life. And, you know, you can be some, I think someone amazing said this to me, you can be a mother to creation, to a project, to art, without actually having to be a mother to children. You can birth many things, right? It really is okay to, you know, reject any ideals, anything that you've been told is normal to do. And this was a conversation that I listened to recently about, you know, so many people carry these, I must do this, I should do that, oh, this is just the way it's done. But these opinions have been given to them. So then you've got someone who's married with children and they never wanted to be there in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so I think something that I sometimes get clients to do and that I've said on talks is make a list of all the things you want in life. Then make a separate column of things I was told I should want. And then move all of the things on the original list that belong there to there. Like, perhaps you could have categories, things my parents told me, things my teachers told me, things society told me, whatever. Separate and see what's left. And then just keep building on that list because, you know, other people meaning well may have said to you, for example, in my case, oh, you're going to want kids. Come on, don't you want well-meaning, but untrue. No, I don't.
Except right? I have the exact same experience, Chrissy. I really do. And there is one there. Yeah, I didn't know. I never talked about it because it's not an issue for me. I had no clue. So we're the same in that regard as well. Congrats. the worst thing. So I want to go one step further. And I knew this since I was 20. I want to not just be childless by choice. I want to be sterile by choice. So okay. I really don't want kids. And because I live polyamorously, so that means that I have partners, or I allow myself to have many, or like many, like at least more than one partner at the same time. There you go. I used to have two partners at the same time last year, but now I am how is it called? Single poly, I guess. So I have my one partner who's my primary partners. My primary partner, I've been together with him for 10 years, 11 years this year. He's really my partner. That's really how it is. But yeah, I had a secondary partner last year. And so we really talked about this with my primary, and he is a cis man, and we talked about vasectomy, and he would totally be up for it. But then we talked about it a little longer, and just like, yeah, actually, I'm the one fooling around more than he does, so it just makes more sense that I get, you know, the snip of the tubes or whatever it is, that I get sterilized if I want it. too. So if we really didn't want to have kids, I asked him like so many times, is that okay that we don't have kids? Because it's really my wish, like what I want. It would feel unfair to kind of impose that on you. And he said, no, I'm happy with our little furry baby. I'm happy with our little furry daughter. And yeah, so the amount of like I can't even put it into words, neither in German nor in English. The amount of discrimination from gynecologists, from doctors, from medical personnel that I have witnessed when I wanted to say, I want to be sterilized. I want to have my tubes tied. I don't know which method I'm going to use yet, but I know that I don't want kids. I know for a fact that I don't want kids. Mm-hmm. Oh, think about it. No, don't do it. You are going to regret it. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. And the worst thing ever said to me by a gynecologist that I had to go to once as a because my normal gynecologist was on holiday, so it was the holiday. The worst thing ever, and they looked, oh, doesn't want kids, is that right? I'm just like, yeah. And I quote, every woman deserves to be a mother.
What? How is that relevant to what you just said? Like, there's a complete difference in topic between deserving
exactly
and wanting. Like, but this is kind of relates to what we were saying about being self-aware, especially as a professional in any capacity, and why continually checking yourself and your biases and your beliefs and being aware that you don't project them onto the people that you're working with, right? It's so, like, there would be a difference between someone who knows, who has a trusting professional relationship with you, to respectfully say, right, you know, fair enough, but, you know, just for your safety and your, you know, mental well-being, shall we go through this properly and talk about it? And, you know, there's a big difference between someone making sure that making sure that you are in the best place, and someone saying, no, what you think is wrong because it goes against what I think.
It goes against my morals and values, and therefore it is wrong. My way or the highway. Yeah.
And it's such a personal thing. It's like if someone said to me, this is a flippant example compared with what we're talking about, but for someone to say, oh, I never want to live in a house, I want a flat. Oh, no, but you know, houses are so important, and they really, like, everyone deserves a house.
Everyone deserves to live in a house. Perfect. Or, like, I mean, even if you want to call it the utmost privilege ever, and I laugh about it because it's so comical. Oh, I think everyone deserves to experience the beauty of the Bahamas once. Everyone deserves to see the Bahamas once.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly that. It's exactly that. And there is, it's odd because I just talked about it yesterday. There is a German account. I'm sure you have the same thing in the UK. And it's an activist, like it's a one person account. And, it's a woman. She's a feminist. She takes like very sexist stuff that is said to women and femmes in the society, and she gender flips them.
Yeah, I've seen similar things.
She gender flips them. So all the prejudices against women, all the contraceptive pill, if we're talking about contraception, because that's what we're talking about, right? So the pill, it's way too dangerous for men, all the mood swings and stuff, but for women it's totally fine because, you know, women are moody anyways, and they're gonna be in a much better mood when they take it, and also the skin improves, so they shouldn't be that bitchy about it. And she completely flipped it and said, oh, the pill, it's way too dangerous for women. Men can take it. It's fine. Oh, they're going to complain less and be less moody. And maybe they will be more compliant to their wives. That will be a great change, stuff like that. I love that account. And I wrote to her and I told her that quote about, you know, every woman deserves to be a mother, and it would be so great to invert it and to make it like every man deserves to be a father. Oh, I don't understand the obsession with the modern men and boys today to have a vasectomy. Like, oh my God, like, are they sure that they're not going to regret it later? Because every man deserves to be a father. That would be so awesome. So I'm waiting for that quote. She told me that she's on it. So yeah.
I feel like this encapsulates in a way like so much of what we've been talking about, because, you know, opinions flying left, right and center, societal, you know, the blanket opinions about what everyone should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
It's just irrelevant. It is irrelevant when it comes to the individual. And, you know, when it comes to I just want to say, like, in terms of body stuff as well, like, in terms of what was, you know, when I was at school, I mean, I'm 26, like it wasn't that long ago, but it was a while ago. And even then, not that long ago, there was just no education around choice, around any of this stuff. No one, I mean, you know, obviously on TV, there was no one that wasn't tiny, but like there was no biological education around the fact that we are literally all built differently. Like, you know, sometimes I say to clients, listen, like, just speak really openly about, like, you know, if I was, you know, built to be tiny, like I would be, but, you know, with a massive, massive chest, that's just how I'm built. Like, you know, that's, I can't wish to have tiny breasts like that. You know, biologically we're built differently, you know, in the same way body, you know, body shape, you know, height, you know, all these different, there was no education around difference and the fact that we are literally built individually, not just physically, mentally as well. Like our personalities will develop differently. We will all have different talents, different areas of intelligence, eventually different preferences, right? So person A might really want kids. Good on them.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean person B wants them. Like, so I think so much of, I feel like the work that you or I or anyone does as well is letting people step into who they are and actually live life authentically to them, not because someone told them to, which is terrifying and very brave. But, you know, in terms of deserving, people deserve to be happy.
Exactly.
And if you're living a full life that just isn't what you want, I mean, I was pushed to go to university at 18. It was detrimental to my health. You know, the more we do what we are told, the more, you know, eventually it's just going to keep crushing you, you know, because it's crushing your spirit. But if you are able to make those choices and be like, yeah, that's who I am. That's just what I want. And I'm not going to force myself to, you know, and again, I speak from a privileged perspective because not everyone has choice in everything. But in terms of, let's say, even the people you spend your time with or whoever, like, you deserve to know you have a choice and to make a different choice instead of following what has been rammed into your brain from day one. It doesn't mean it's right, you know. So
it's brave to be yourself. Absolutely. It's brave to be yourself, especially in this world, but you deserve it. Yeah, totally, totally, totally. I'm totally with you on that.
And therefore, if you are, the more we are able to be ourselves and seek out people and go to, let's say, the things that we're passionate in or whatever, we're more able to build authentic relationships because those people that love us for us, not because we behave this way or behave that way, we can talk ourselves into this. Those people are the example I gave with a little kid just wanting to be told, I love you just for being. That's what those people do. Like, instead of, I'm going to pretend I am this person. So I'm just forming false relationships with all these people because they're befriending a fantasy.
Yeah.
This person's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really fundamental. I didn't know I was getting coached by you when I interview you, because this is something that is very much ingrained in me that I still struggle with, and I'm going to be very raw, open, and honest about this. Like this whole ideal that I don't need to pretend to be anyone that I am not, and the one mantra that that I got from our last coaching session that I have lettered and put on my wall is like, really, I don't have to earn love. I don't. And I really want to take like 1 minute and thank you for this, because I too have my fair share of little trauma packages to carry around. Like we all do. And thank you for the work that you do. I mean, without Chrissy, you would not be able to listen to this podcast. Without Chrissy, you would not be able to have the best coaching that you can possibly have with me. So it is in your interest to support Chrissy as well so that she can coach me still.
But just to comment on that, like, obviously that means the world to me, but all of this stuff, that all came from you. You know, I can sit here, you know, talking to anyone, that doesn't mean they're going to come, you know, if they're not able to meet me there. If I can speak to any person, but they will never be able to produce what you can, because that is yours and you've done all this. So you need to give yourself that credit, you know?
Oh, thank you. Now I'm tearing up. I knew you were this. You wanted this. You wanted me to tear up at the end. But just admit it. What? Now you can take your little checklist out. Okay, so my little accomplishments in life. Ooh, I made one of my clients tear up on her own podcast and praise me to death. Oh yeah, I got this. Come on. Achievement unlocked. There you go.
You make me sound like some kind of Disney villain, like, ha ha ha, I made this happen. No, but I mean it. Sorry. I hope you made that.
This was not my intention. This was not my intention. I wanted to make a little joke out of it, as you know. But yeah, no, I mean it. I mean it. I mean it. I really do. So if people want to support you and they want to check you out, where can they find you?
Mm-hmm. So my website is youareenoughcoaching.co.uk. I'm also on Instagram, and I'm going to spell it out. So Chrissy, Chrissy underscore Shroomie, Shroomie. The reason that is because of a childhood nickname, don't ask. So yes, that is my Instagram. And yeah, please feel free to drop me a message.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time, Chrissy.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
You may have noticed I am large. I can't hide it. It's no secret. It's a fact. I'm technically obese. I'm wobbly, jiggly, and round. In a word, quite frankly, I'm fat. The word fat can sometimes cause a bit of shock. Some people are offended, but I'm not. I've owned it and reclaimed it, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm fat, and frankly, I rock. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large. Gonna stop. My body sings and dances. that's just some of why my fat body rocks. The war on obesity's a pile of shit. They just wanna sell you one more diet book. They spend $650 billion round the world, so we're at war against the way that people look. Some people wanna clutch their pearls and worry about us. They should be dieting! Dear God, what about their health? But there's no correlation between health and my appearance, so you can keep your damned opinions to yourself. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom, and that's why my fat body is.